Up here, we are finally at the end of our series, Storytime with Jesus, where we've been looking at all these parables. We've covered roughly half the parables that Jesus taught, but a lot of his parables are kind of duplicate and they have a lot of overlap. So when I looked at where we've gone, this is the 12th week. That's a long time to be in one series. We've really covered a lot of ground in looking at how Jesus taught us to live our lives as strangers and aliens on this earth, but waiting for his kingdom rule to be perfect and complete. We're kind of in the tension of his kingdom is here, but it's not completely in place. And so today, we end with the end. Today, we're talking about the end of the world. In fact, today I want to teach you some things I learned from the book, 88 Reasons Why the Rapture Will Be in 1988. Actually, I'm not going to use that book. Do any of you remember that book? Any of you? A few of you? Okay. So I was raised in an evangelical house, and I was frequently taught the rapture is imminent. And then I heard about this book, 88 Reasons Why the Rapture Will Be in 1988. And in 87, REM came out with a super popular song. It's the end of the world, and we know it. Now I feel fine. Some of you know that song. The lyrics go super duper fast. But so I'm a 7-year-old kid, and all I'm hearing about in my home and at church is how the rapture is coming. So you better be ready. So I'm not going to lie. I had those moments where I would come home from school and my mom was like out running an errand. And I'd, Mom, where are you? Mom! She wasn't home. I would be gripped with dread that I missed the rapture. My mom was gone. I was going to hell. It was a very, very scary time for me. It was a bad year. Let's put it that way. But I'm not alone, because I've talked with a lot of kids in my cohort, my age group, and if they were raised in an evangelical home like me, they had the exact same fear. I talked to one kid when he got to college. They played an elaborate ploy and had somebody play a trumpet loudly outside a kid's dorm room, and they had everybody's clothes crumpled along the hallways of the dorm room. That kid thought he missed the rapture, okay? So there's all this push that was so constant that at any moment, all the Christians are just going to vanish. And it's going to be here at any time. And it kept going. It wasn't just 1988, because when that didn't happen in September of 88, he revised it. He put out a new pamphlet called 89 Reasons Why He's Coming Back in 89. And then you guys remember the Y2K bug, and there were a whole bunch of predictions that the end of the world was going to happen in the year 2000. And while a preoccupation with guessing at the year that Jesus will return, it has been increasing in recent years, and I'm actually going to show you a chart of that later. But it's been a popular topic going all the way back to Jesus' disciples. People have always wondered, how is this grand experiment we call life on this earth one day going to end? As a result, Jesus taught a couple of parables in Matthew chapter 24 and 25. If you want to turn there, we'll be in both chapters. And in those parables, he taught how and when he was going to return. And so today's final parable in our series is going to be the parable of the 10 virgins as found in Matthew chapter 25. But before we jump into the story Jesus tells, we're going to look at first a big chunk of teaching that Jesus gives his disciples and the crowd around him, where he tells what's going to happen before his second coming. As Christians, we understand Jesus, the Messiah, the promised one, in the Old Testament, they knew in prophecy he was going to come to earth. That's Jesus. But he talks about how one day he is going to come back and return. And as Christians, we're waiting still for that day. So if you want to join along, we're going to be in Matthew chapter 24, verse 3, where Jesus describes, this is what has to happen before I come back for my second coming. Matthew 24, beginning in verse 3. It's a long chunk. As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. Tell us, they said, when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? That's what they called it, the end of the age, the end of the world. Jesus answered, watch out that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, claiming I am the Messiah, the promised one, and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. So, looking at that passage, we can break out a list of things that Jesus tells us is going to happen before the end will come. This was a 30-point question in junior Bible quiz when I was raised up. So like these seven things I had locked in my mind. But this is what he says is going to happen before he returns and puts into motion the final timeline here on earth. First, he leads with deception and false teachers. There's going to be a lot of people who are deceived about what's going on. People who say, I'm the promised one. I'm part of Team Jesus. Don't be led astray. There's going to be wars and rumors of wars, nation against nation, kingdom against kingdom. Natural disasters like famines and earthquakes. Increase in persecution against Christians. He says, you will be hated because of me. Christians' affiliation with Christ is going to cause them to be persecuted in ways that are terrible. Increase in wickedness. The love of many will grow cold. In fact, even Christians will hate other Christians. Evangelism to all peoples. The gospel message of Jesus will go out to all nations, it says. Most people understand that to mean all people groups, all tribes and tongues, every group of people that has their own language. The message of the gospel has to reach every single one of them before Jesus will return. And before we talk about that list further, which we're going to, there is one more prophetic verse in the Bible from Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, that allows us to add one more point. In Daniel 12, 4, it says, but you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. So we add to that a seventh point. That is the increase in both knowledge and travel. This running to and fro is this understanding. People are going to be traversing the earth in new ways at the end of times. And now, when you look at that list, and you read it, and you let it soak in, and you compare it to today's events, it is no wonder that so many people feel like Jesus could be coming back any day now. I could easily tie all seven of these points back to world events, but I know you've already been thinking about that even as I've been talking through it. You see these connection points. And yet, it's really important to realize that we are not the first people to look at this passage, to see this bulleted list, and think that it describes our time and our culture perfectly. This list has connected with people at many other times in history, as evidenced by all the previous and incorrect predictions of Jesus' return so far. Let me show you a chart of the years in which people have predicted Jesus would come back. I'm getting this from Wikipedia, so it may not be perfect. But for the first 12 centuries, there were 10 big, well-known predictions of Jesus' return. But then in the 13th century, there were two predictions. In the 14th century, there were four. In the 15th, there were zero. But then it starts to escalate. 10 in the 16th, 13 in the 17th, 13 in the 18th, 16 in the 19th. 61 predictions in the 1900s, the 20th century. And from the year 2000 to the year 2023, there have already been 22 false, wrong predictions that the world was going to end. It made me feel better about why I had this weird belief that Jesus was going to come back, because I kept hearing it and seeing it everywhere in my church and how I was raised. And it's not just the kooks who make these predictions. Like, you might be thinking, well, Ryan, is this just a bunch of knucklehead fringe people? It's not. Here's a list of people who have been making these predictions. We start out with Gregory of Tours. He was quite famous back in 300 AD. Multiple popes in the early centuries. Martin Luther predicted Jesus was coming back in the year 1600. Then the Shakers had a famous prediction the world was going to end. John Wesley, the founder of Methodism and our Methodist churches, he predicted in a specific year the world was going to end. Seventh-day Adventists, Jehovah's Witnesses, Jim Jones, he said, drink the Kool-Aid, the world's ending with us today. We know how that ended. Chuck Smith, famous pastor who started the entire Calvary Chapel movement out in California. Pat Robertson, you guys have all heard of him. Edgar Weisenot, he's the one who wrote 88 Reasons, the rapture's coming in 88. Harold Camping has 12 predictions. Every time he gets it wrong, he says, my math was wrong, I refigured it, now it's this one. He has millions of people who listen to him on the radio. He's moved it 12 times. And people keep believing it. Jerry Falwell, Tim LaHaye, the Left Behind books. This is a well-known group of people, okay? And it's because throughout history, there have been many times that people sit and look at the world and they go, that list that we were looking at, it fits this moment really well. In the same way today, I'm not going to argue with you. That list of seven things fits our moment really well today. The problem is, a really unfortunate thing has happened as a result of all these failed predictions and this long duration since Jesus said that he was going to return soon. And that is that countless Christians have allowed this delay and all these failed predictions that never came true to discourage them. And as a result, they have abandoned their faith. They've looked at all these famous people who study the Bible so much, who have said, Jesus is coming at this time. And then when Jesus didn't, they're like, you guys don't know what you're talking about. Jesus said he was coming soon. It's been over 2,000 years, Ryan. You know what? He's not coming. But here's the truth we must believe. The fact that Jesus has not yet returned doesn't mean that he won't. We can't allow it to get us discouraged. We can't believe, well, he didn't come on my timeline, so he must not be who he said he is, and he must not be doing what he said he was going to do and coming back. This is God's timeline, not ours. The fact that it hasn't happened yet doesn't mean that we give up. It means we wait. We persevere. That's what we are called to do. In fact, in our parable today, Jesus warns that he's going to be gone a long time, but that we must anticipate his return and be ready, even if it takes longer than anybody expected. So finally, we're turning to our parable today in Matthew chapter 25, a long setup. But here we see where Jesus says what we actually need to know about his second coming. At that time, he says, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish, and 5 were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps, but did not take any oil with them. The wise ones, however, took oil in jars along with their lamps. The bridegroom was a long time in coming, and they all became drowsy, and they fell asleep. At midnight, the cry rang out, "Here's the bridegroom. Come out and meet him." Then all the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish ones said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil. Our lamps are going out." "No," they replied, "there may not be enough for both us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves." But while they were on their way to buy the oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the others also came. "Lord, Lord," they said, "open the door for us." But he replied, "Truly I tell you, I don't know you. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour." So, first, what we have to understand, these 10 virgins are the bridesmaids, okay? They would have been the bridesmaids for this wedding party. The bridegroom is Jesus himself. That's what he's alluding to. In the Old Testament, there are multiple occasions where we see God refer to himself as the husband and Israel as his wife, okay? And they were in a marriage covenant together. So it fits that Jesus refers to himself as the bridegroom who's going to be coming, as Paul tells us, for the church. In this parable, there's 10 virgins. They're the bridesmaids who are to be waiting and ready for this party. So in Jewish custom, for the marriage, the groom and his friends would leave the groom's house. They would go to the bride's house, typically at night, have the wedding ceremony at the bride's house. Then everybody, including the bridesmaids, these virgins, would join them back at the groom's house for the wedding banquet. That's what was going on here, what they would have known. And so these bridesmaids in the parable would have known the groom was to be coming at night, but they didn't know when exactly. So the five virgins were ready to wait for a while, the wise virgins. They not only brought their own dome-shaped lamp, but they also brought extra oil so that that rag that was burning up, they could keep adding oil and keep it burning a very long time. The foolish virgins, however, didn't think it would take that long. They thought it was only going to be a short amount of time, so they just brought their lamp, but they didn't bring any extra oil. The problem is, as the text said, the groom takes longer than expected. So when word comes out that he's on his way, the five who didn't have the extra oil, their lamps are going out. Unfortunately, those who were prepared couldn't provide enough oil so that all 10 of them had the light. And so they said, "You got to go get your own. We can't help you." And while those five foolish ones, those unprepared ones, were gone, the groom came. And the five who were ready joined him in the wedding banquet, the celebration. But the five who had gone to find oil were unprepared for him to tarry so long. So when they arrived at the house late, they were told they could not enter. It's too late for them. They're not allowed in. And it's from this passage now that we can break this down. There's some rules that Jesus gives us for end times. These are the things he wants us to learn from this passage. We can't miss these things. First, there's going to be an unknowingly long wait. There was a long time before the bridegroom's return, so long that those bridesmaids weren't ready. There was no way for them to know exactly how long until he came, but they didn't prepare themselves for it to be as long as they thought it would be. In the same way, we have no idea how long it's going to be before Jesus comes back. In Jesus' day, they thought by the year 70, as there is all this persecution around the Jews, that that was the end. And that had been a long time, like 35 years. Then we hit the year 1000, many predictions. That was a very long time. We hit the year 2000. People are like, "Oh my goodness, he's due at this point." But we don't know when he's coming back. Nobody does. Jesus is very clear on this point. In Matthew 24, verse 36, he says to his disciples, "But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son." Jesus doesn't know the exact time of his return, but the Father only knows. That's a really important verse. Nobody knows when. If somebody says, it's going to happen in this three-day span, September 2026, I call rubbish. Nobody can nail it down like that. And here's the thing. People hate waiting. We want to experience heaven. And so this long wait, it just causes people anxiety. And I think that's why so many people make these predictions. They're just ready for Jesus to finally return. They want the wait to be over. But none of us are going to know that day or time except for God the Father. Secondly, when he does return, it will come suddenly. Out of nowhere, the bridegroom came in the middle of the night. The bridesmaids had fallen asleep, in fact. And suddenly, they need to be ready to join him. Paul tells us the same thing's going to happen with Jesus' return. On that last day, Paul says, it will come in the twinkling of an eye with a loud trumpet blast. Jesus has given us signs that will demonstrate the end is near. We can recognize the season. And we try to decipher the signs of the times, but so far, hundreds of people have made predictions and they've all gotten it wrong. The actual moment, it's going to take us, I believe, by surprise. There aren't going to be a whole bunch of prayer vigils as people are in churches waiting, hey, it's going to be in this three-day period. That's not what Jesus is teaching here. So be ready. Five of the bridesmaids were prepared for the long delay. They had extra oil in their lamps to keep them burning. They had anticipated this moment and they were ready at the sudden return. Five of them were foolish. They did not persevere. They were not ready for the long wait. Essentially, they had given up when their lamps went out. We have to make sure that we understand God and his requirements for our life. That's ultimately how we make sure that we're prepared. We need to make sure we're learning what God has taught us and that we're living it out. I think too many people make up their own idea of what it means to be ready. And they're like, well, I'll be a good person. I'll work hard. I'll go to church on Christmas and Easter. You know, I'll occasionally put $20 when I see somebody in need. And in their mind, they're thinking, I'm doing everything the right way. I'm prepared. But they don't read the Bible, they don't pray, and they don't know that what God actually wants from all of us, and the Bible tells us, is that we find our salvation by grace through faith. If you don't understand that, your wick is going to be out and you will be found not ready. He will come suddenly and you will not be ready. Fourth, it's your responsibility to be prepared. In this parable, we see these five foolish virgins who didn't bring their extra oil. When they realize their mistake, they lean on the other five and say, help me out. You did your job. Can both of us get in because of what you did? In the same way, I feel like there are times where children feel like they're going to ride on mom's or grandma's coattails into heaven. Well, you know, my grandma was a really godly lady, and she brought me to church all the time growing up. That doesn't mean anything. That's like saying, I'm going to borrow somebody else's oil because I wasn't prepared for myself. When the end comes suddenly, it's your responsibility, your decisions, your faith. You're the one who stands in front of God. Nobody else is going to speak for you. So you have to make sure that you are prepared. Finally, there's no option to get in the door after it's closed. The saddest and most serious warning from this parable is this. The excuse that we have, well, better late than never, isn't going to apply here. There is going to be no, okay, rapture happened or Jesus returned, the end happened, and I'm going to have a few seconds to go, Jesus, I guess they were all right. Now I make the decision. The moment has passed. You were not prepared. You were gone looking for the oil, apparently. The door has been closed. Once judgment comes, there's no, okay, now I've got a little more time to prepare myself. Jesus makes it very clear in this parable that those foolish virgins are not allowed inside. And so he ends it when he tells us at the end of that passage, Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour. So in light of world events, all of us should be living like Jesus will return today, and yet prepare like it will be another 100 years. We have to live in that tension. That's the same way that Jesus has asked all of his followers for 2,000 years to live. He didn't tell them, hey, in the first couple hundred years, you got a long time. You don't need to worry about it. All Christians for all time have been called to live with an anticipation that it could happen at any moment. But we also understand we have to prepare ourselves that this could take a long time. Don't say, well, I don't need to save for my retirement because Jesus is coming back. I'm not going to need it. That's foolishness. It could be another 100 years. Just because of what's happening in America today does not shape how God views his entire timeline of what he's planning to do. So even if America has a massive shift and democracy crumbles, it doesn't mean that Jesus has to return. He could take another 1,000 years. I'm sure that the people 1,000 years ago thought for certain it was going to be very soon. They had the same beliefs we do. It doesn't mean that we're wrong for holding those beliefs. We have to hold that intention. He could come back today. He could come back long after you have passed on. So how shall we live? Here's what Jesus taught us about how we're to live on this earth through his parables. We've had this entire series to learn how we are to live. If I could have the youth who are going to actually help pass out some cards to you all. I had a good suggestion. Somebody said, could you put all the parables on a card so that we can remember where we've gone? You three, you can start passing them out. Thank you. So we've got a list, just like what we've got on the board here. So how are we to live? We are to live obeying Jesus' teaching. We are to be praying persistently. We don't give up. We forgive our enemies. We give out our money generously. We don't hoard it for ourselves. We serve God with our talents, with our abilities. We show compassion and mercy like the Good Samaritan showed to the man who is beat up on the side of the road. We trust God's judgment. And we also celebrate his acceptance of the son who has returned home. We share our faith boldly. Like I said, when this in the introduction, this series on the parables really covered broadly exactly how it is that Jesus taught us to live. And we read this list, and there's nothing here that makes you go, wow, this is completely unique. But it's an incredible reminder. This is how I'm called to live. This is what it looks like to be a citizen in the kingdom of heaven today, being light and life for the dark world around us. If all of us got all these things right, what an incredible difference it would make in our community around us. So I hope you've enjoyed this series on the parables of Jesus as much as I have. I've really loved teaching through this. And Jesus may have taught these lessons in story form to confound the wise. Yet if you have ears to hear, his message couldn't be clearer. Now it's up to us to respond with obedience today, to live the way he taught his followers to live as citizens in this kingdom. Would you bow your heads with me as we pray?